Okay, money and markets. The big story in the markets this week, of course, was the Fed announcing that they are going to taper starting in January. Their balance sheet has now exploded to $4 trillion of assets, which is pretty mind-boggling. Although, as you know, I think many of those assets are essentially worthless. I think they've been having a shredding party cleaning up the fraud. But what they did do is announce that they're cutting their $85 billion a month of purchases of both Treasury and mortgage securities back by $10 billion a month. I put up a little commentary in the blog, which said Fed delivers bah humbug to gold. Stock market was up slightly, you know, sort of record high territory, but gold down, and then this morning broke through the 1200 line. I put another link up to my article on what percentage of my assets should I hold in precious metals, where I strongly recommend if we breach the 1200 line that you only be holding core position at that point, that you sell out of any investment positions, because I think breaching the 1200 line, it can go much lower, particularly if it breaches 1180 is the line that Franklin and I talked about in the last precious metals market report. So gold, it looks very, very weak here. So if you haven't, if you continue to maintain investment positions in gold, you definitely want to read that article. We're coming into the time of year when, at the end of the year and the end of the fourth quarter, we look at how the different asset categories have really been for the year. And there's a great, you know, that's a time when asset allocations really get looked at. And what's important to understand is that essentially almost everything was down this year other than North American markets. We have emerging markets down about 8 to 9%, commodities down much, much more, with gold approaching 30% down. But you have some commodities down more than 50 or 60%. It's an extraordinary time for the commodities markets. North America is now up over 20%, but the bond funds, long-term treasury funds, down 10 to 14%. So with emerging markets down, bond funds down, commodities down, gold and precious metals down, North America is up sharply, but everything else is down. And so the question, if you're a money manager, is do you keep your money in things that are high and with the hope that they go higher, or do you start to look at the other thing, other asset categories, which is difficult because they're still flat or going down. So the question remains, can North America continue to go up? Very big question. Bonds have been coming down for about, the long-term bull market in bonds has been going on since 1980. So we see interest rates falling until this year. And then starting this year, they started to spike up. And so making a lot of these fixed income positions more unnerving. I also just wanted to show you a chart of North American markets versus the emerging markets, because when the QEs, when the quantitative easing and sort of central bank pumping started after the bailouts, the emerging markets in North America were trading up together, but they've diverged tremendously this year. Part of that is a commodity story, with the emerging markets much more tied to commodities. But when you look at the North American markets, we're at a PE of 24 or higher, which is very high on average. But if you look back since the beginning of the S&P index in the 1880s, what you see is there have been two spikes that took us much, much higher. One was the what's called the Roaring 20s, and then, of course, the tech bubble. And if you look at the new technology coming out and what the sort of rule changes that the SEC is making and the strength of the IPO market, the question is, could it happen again? But whatever way we look around the markets, the bad news about the legacy systems is everywhere. That's very much a bond story. And the good news about what's going on is, that's positive is percolating, but it's amazing how much of it still remains hidden. But you can see it when you look at the S&P 500. Currency wars continue to get more and more intense. We have the same battle between the old and the new, and between centralization versus decentralization. The Bank of England, and this is up on the blog, announced they're going to plastic currency by 2016, so more digital currency essentially. The largest Bitcoin exchange in China, BTC China, announced that they're no longer going to accept yuan deposits. And that's on the heels of the central bank, China's central bank, saying that the country's banks and payment system were barred from handling the virtual currency. Doesn't surprise me. If I was China, I wouldn't want a digital currency that leaves a digital trail coming in and soaking up my good currency. So on that announcement, Bitcoin fell by over 50%, or approximately 50%, which is why I keep saying never put any money in Bitcoin except that which you're prepared to lose 100%. While that was going on in the digital currency side, South Korea announced they're starting a physical gold exchange. And as I pointed out in my commentary in the blog, this follows on the heel of Singapore, Moscow, Thailand, a series of different countries doing the same thing. And it's not surprising that as we see more and more push towards digital currencies and plastic currencies, that the big financial centers, or the certainly the financial centers in the areas which are growing, the sort of BRIC nations, not in the G7, that those players want the ability to settle in something real and without necessarily leaving a digital trail, which is why I say in my article on precious metals that I pointed you to, you want to continue to hold your core position. The growing economies of the world are certainly building theirs. We continue to see more and more reports of gold being moved to China. I'm going to talk a little bit more about it in Ask Catherine. And I would just underscore the fact that we really don't see the full picture on what's going on. The Data Beast is on the march. I call it the Data Beast after an article I wrote called The Data Beast, which I really encourage you to read. But there are numerous articles up on the blog about the NSA battle and the battle over surveillance. Let me tell you what the end game here is, because you're going to start to see more and more as these different, whether it's the litigation or congressional policy or different private companies positioning themselves in certain ways vis-a-vis the NSA. What the end game is here is we're watching an effort by the shadow government to really cut out the government. They're going to depend on the telecoms, on the search engines, social media to run the sort of surveillance infrastructure. And what we're seeing is a cutting of the power of the government now that government funding has basically paid for the building out of the network. A lot of those companies built a lot of what they did as government contractors. So basically, taxpayer money has built out the network, but now the private guys can take it over. And the NSA is subject to FOIA, is subject to congressional oversight. If you want to understand the dynamic, we had on the Saleri Report about a year or two ago, the movie, Italian movie called The Listening, which shows the shift in the balance of power between the contractors behind the NSA, and the NSA is one of the sort of subplots in the movie. And what it reminds you is the compromise of privacy will be much worse under the private guys. I put up, somebody sent me an article that was a impassioned defense of the NSA by a former employee, and I posted it, and it tells one side of the story. The budget deal continues to be headed for approval, but the Secretary of the Treasury reminds us again this week that the debt limit extension is still not resolved. The deadline is February 1st is when they say they're running out of money. And so if we're going to have a sort of a get off to a stable start, we need more than a two-year budget deal. We need the debt limit issues resolved. The other thing is Congress did not renew unemployment, which is a little bit surprising because or the long-term unemployment extensions, because that's going to be an immediate whack to the GNP in the first part, in the first quarter of the year. And it's certainly a bah humbug to happen at Christmas. It'll be interesting to see how this plays in 2014, because the employment situation continues to be bleak for many, many people. We continue to put the fiscal cliff pieces, cycle them up on the blog. And if you don't want to read it in one sitting, I would encourage you to check it out each week. Just happened today, Obama issues veto threat over Iran. So the Iran deal continues to be dicey and very politically sensitive. We see Saudi Arabia kicking up their heels and screaming all week long. And I doubt that that's unrelated to the politics between the president and the Senate over the Iran bill. China is celebrating its first lunar probe. It successfully landed its probe on the moon and now announcing it's planning on sending another craft in 2017 that will land and return with samples. So the race for space is on, and we'll talk more in the wrap-up this year about the incredible growth and explosion of investment in space. It's very real. Good news for 2013, the Trans-Pacific Partnership ended the negotiations for the year with no deal. They could not get to closure. Hallelujah. Anyway, so we'll have to come up with stratagems to make sure that doesn't happen in 2014. Under the category no, Iceland put some bankers in jail and has come up with a new constitution. And this is widely being circulated around the internet as to the implication being, oh, maybe we should consider a new constitution and start crowdfunding our constitution. Don't go there. Don't think that's a good idea. If you think things are bad now, wait, you see what happens if Mr. Global can talk people into putting the constitution in play. Don't even open that one. There are also a variety of various articles about how wonderful it would be if we could give up property rights, how wonderful if everything could be not-for-profit, we all need to share, we all need to stop trying to own our own homes, and all sorts of other various attempts to market feudalism and, you know, sort of personal financial powerlessness is fashionable. Don't buy it. You know, that's under the rubric of what's coming with the NSA scandal, which says government's bad. Let's give the telecoms control. Anyway, so these are, you know, fascism being fronted as reform. Don't buy into it. Interestingly enough, my last comment in Money and Markets for this week is there was a Wall Street Journal poll, page 2 of the Wall Street Journal this week on Wednesday, entitled Politics Divide the Sexes. And interestingly enough, there were 8 different topics from the economy to gun control. And I agreed with the men 7 out of 8 times, which I thought was interesting. If you look at the wide disagreements, and they are wide disagreements between the genders, it struck me that many of the positions taken by the women in the polls were very much sort of positions that were relate to the spin that tugs at the heartstrings, as opposed to looking at the deeper story and watching what's really going on. So I would just say to all the ladies out there, make sure when you think about your assessment of different policies, you look at what's really going on, what the deeper story is, and beware of the heartstrings being pulled. It's one of Mr. Global's favorite things to do, is pull the heartstrings and get the women to sort of pull the rug out from under the men. So remember to be very discerning. Don't buy it for a second.